This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.
A woman may read a Game of Thrones.
A woman may start a podcast.
Two women may host Podcasters Landing, the show devoted to the entire A Song of Ice and Fire series.
Two women may cover three chapters each week, followed by history and friendship lessons.
A listener may sit and tune in.
A woman may use adult language.
A woman may reveal spoilers.
A listener may support the show on our Patreon page at patreon.com/Sophia Mayer Studios, all under case.
A woman welcomes a listener to Podcaster's Landing.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Nat.
And today we are covering Eddard, Catelyn, and Jon. Mm-hmm. All Starks.
Yeah, Starks-ish, I guess.
And Stark adjacent.
Yeah.
So for Eddard, suddenly he's the Hand of the King again?
Yeah. I was really annoyed at Robert in this chapter.
Of course. Just... And then Catelyn and Lysa get to eat their words.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it just brings me joy.
Yeah. And Jon advocates for Sam.
Mm-hmm. Yes, so cute.
Yeah, so adorable. So, but first we have Ned. And he dreamt the old dream. Okay, so what is the significance of this dream in context with this chapter I'm trying to think of? Because we get a lot of dreams.
Mm-hmm. We do have a lot of dreams in A Game of Thrones, don't we? Everyone's just dreaming about everything. Yeah. But I don't know. Maybe because I'm too simple. But it is, you know, because he went to fight. It was, what, 7-3? And I guess it's kind of like was adjacent to what he had just gone through.
This is possible. But... And because I'm a little... Obviously, there are certain dreams like Bran's and, you know, some others where their dreams mm-hmm. are prophetic and visionary in nature. But a lot of times authors will use dreams as the crux of, you know, displaying the past, like dreaming about the past. And I'm like,
yeah.
I don't know if I've ever had a dream that exactly mirrors, like, a past experience.
Like, yeah, no.
Yeah, no, so never. Yeah, so I just think there are, you know, you should maybe only do it once. Like, it shouldn't be, or do something, have a crazy dream, and it's like, oh, that's not how it happened, and then, like, backtrack and exposition explaining. Like, just using the dream as the, like, you know, cheap or the shortcut to, like, show... you know, establish certain, like, facts about the past. I'm just like, not so much. I'm not into that.
Yeah, no, me neither. It feels a bit like a cop-out instead of actually explaining what's happening. And it's not like he doesn't have enough books to explain, mm-hmm. Does he?
Yeah, which I will excuse it more in film because you actually see what happens. Like, in the medium of film and television, I'm okay with it. But in terms of books, it's just like, no, you could just as easily, like, do a flashback mode.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so he's here dreaming of the fact that him going to rescue Lyanna after the war.
Yeah.
And he had seven people with him. Yeah, and the Tower of Joy. And he has seven people with him, which is Martin Cassell, which is Jory's father, mm-hmm. Theo Wool, Ethan Glover, who was his brother's squire before, mm-hmm. Sir Mark Rysell, Hallen Reed, Lord Dustin. Is that it?
Yeah.
I think that's it.
And then, and so... Sir Arthur Dayne is on the opposing side.
Oh, yes. The Sword of the Morning.
Yeah.
Apparently, he was the Kingsguard. He was part of the Kingsguard, but he was the the main guy of the Kingsguard. Wow.
The Lord Commander of the Kingsguard?
Thank you. It's right there. It's written right there. What was he?
Yeah.
Or is he another one?
I don't know. But the point is, I don't know. I guess I kind of mixed it up. Because Arthur Dayne and Ned Stark kind of mirror each other. Because they have, he has his sword Dawn and Eddard has his sword Ice.
Yeah, yeah, both huge swords.
Yeah, apparently. Both huge-ass Valyrian swords.
Yeah, and I think Arthur Dayne as well doesn't want, like, stuff to go down the way that it's going to go down. It says here that he had a sad smile on his lips when they approached.
Yeah, and then there's the whole, not relevant to the dream, but the whole idea of potentially, like, Arthur Dayne's like sister or daughter was John's mother or something.
Oh, is it?
Or something like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, so they're out battling, you know, in front of the Tower of Joy. And he can eerily...
Which, by the way, is in Dorne. And I thought, you know, if in this, you know, if in the books at the end we'll find out that, you know, R plus L.
Yeah.
Then it's a bit of a piss take that Rhaegar took Lyanna to where his wife is from. It's just a bit rude.
Yeah, that is a little bit rude. I didn't think about that. I'm just thinking about it purely strategic, that it makes sense. It's that the Dornish are invested in being, you know, on the Targaryen side because of, you know, their you know, Elia's children are now in the Targaryen line. So, like, it makes sense that Dorne, from that point of view, is the last, like, stronghold of, like, Targaryen, like, defense and resistance.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
So.
But I was just thinking, in a way, it was just, like, fucking men.
Yeah, that's, honestly, that reminds me of, again, the deposed Shaw, and his wife, and when he was dying, like, he did have a previous wife who he divorced because she couldn't have children. And he needed an heir, but, like, she still loved him. And, like, they wanted to see each other before he died, but he didn't know how to navigate that with, you know, his current wife, the Empress, being there.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Tricky.
Yeah. And, but, yeah, so, and then he hears Lyanna's, like, screaming his name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, screaming Eddard, but you know that that's coming from, like, him waking up, because you would think Lyanna would just call him Ned.
Yeah, which I think she was, but I like the bit here that it says, you know, Sir Arthur Dayne says to Ned, and now he begins, and then Ned says, no, now he ends. And I like that bit, the way that they did it in the in the show. I like how they did that in the show.
Oh yeah, because we get it in the show via Bran's visions, correct?
We get in Bran's vision. I think it's the beginning of one of the episodes of the seventh season. I think the last episode of the seventh season, because he leaves. Because then straight after that, we see Jon and Daenerys having sex.
Oh, which yeah.
is so disturbing.
Oh, yeah, I do. Yeah, I know. But anyway, so we've got, you know, him reliving this fight. And, you know, first it's Lyanna's calling his name, and then, which I have done in my dreams, where, like, someone in the dream is, like, calling my name, and then you're, like, jostled awake, and it's, like, someone else waking you up. Like, I have had that. So that is realistic.
Yeah. I have had a lot when I leave, like, a TV on, and then I hear the TV in my dreams. I see, like, something going on in my dreams, and it's actually the TV. But anyway.
Oh. Yep. And then finally, it's Ned wakes up, and it's Vaon Poole, the steward, you know, drinking, and then, no, Master Pycelle is not there, only water. Master Pycelle said you would be thirsty, and then, you know, basically it says, like, no dilly-dallying, like, the king wants to see you the moment you wake up, and he's like, I can't walk, you idiot, tell him to come here.
I mean, yeah, this is what, like, really pisses me off already. It's just that Robert, it starts already that Robert's being just incredibly inconsiderate, saying that as soon as he wakes up, he needs to go see him. Like, he's just been through a fight, he broke his fucking leg.
a horse Robert's crush. Like,
yeah, and Robert's like, tell him to come in and see me as soon as he wakes up, please. Honestly, this guy is just shitty. Shitty.
Yeah. And this, so what we got? We've got...
So Paul goes in to talk to Ned. To go see Robert. Because Ned says, tell him I'm too weak to come to him. If he wishes to speak to me, I should be pleased to receive him here.
Yeah, and it's interesting. It's like, my daughters, they have been with you every day, my lord. Sansa prays quietly, but Arya, she has not said a word since they brought you back. She's a fierce little thing, my lord. I have never seen such anger in a girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just the complete different sides
they
could have taken this.
Yeah, it's just like, again, never trust the quiet ones, because the quiet ones are going to be the one to murder you in your sleep.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's what we'll find out about Arya later anyway. But then we also find out as well that Jaime has fled the city. Apparently gone back to Castle Rock to join his father.
Gather forces.
Yeah, because, Catelyn took Tyrion, so they're getting ready to fight, which is great. Fantastic.
I'm not sure how to interpret in terms of levels of blame, because it's like, I don't know. I just feel like, of course, Jaime like confronting Ned and being like really shitty in the street and killing his men, like that was totally out of line regardless of what they've done. Like, it should have been, if Jaime had any sort of sense of intelligence or quote unquote honor, he just would have left like the city, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To go, like, you know, I don't know. Anyway, but then, yeah, no. And is it on Jaime to, like, maintain his composure when, you know, Catelyn has broken all the rules of propriety by taking Tyrion?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That is true.
Yeah. It's complicated.
It is. It's very complicated. It's just the whole mess. That's why, I guess, at this point, we're not supposed to understand anyway. And we're supposed to have, you know, mixed feelings about everything that's going on.
Yeah. And then, so finally, Robert drags his ass in there with Cersei trotting at his heels.
Mm-hmm. And again, very inconsiderate by bringing her there.
Yeah, it's...
Especially when they start to argue as mm-hmm. well. Because he's just not in a fit state to argue or anything.
Yeah.
And Robert comes in and already starts accusing, you know? He didn't go there to ask him what was going on. He's telling him what's going on. And
yeah, it's, again, there's no reason for Robert to bring Cersei. Like, I'm at the point in my life where, you know, it's easy to think of people who are directly the squeaky wheel like Cersei and demonize them. But what about the people or like the spouses or anyone else who tolerates that behavior and doesn't do anything? Like, they're not in the middle. They are also just as bad, if not worse, for allowing mm-hmm. the squeaky wheel to continue as it is.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's why I'm not blaming Cersei here at all. I'm blaming Robert for not saying, no, you can talk to him after he gets better. I'm going to go see him now.
Yeah.
You know, it's just
and it's just, again, of course, I guess it's again in the society where there's no sort of individualism. It's all collective about your family and your name. And it's just like, you know, Cersei being so incensed by everything. But she doesn't give a crap about Tyrion.
Yeah, no, she doesn't. It's just an excuse, isn't it? It's just an excuse to get angry at people and maybe start a war and maybe take over the place,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah,
it's like I guess it's a slight to the family name. It's nothing to do.
Yeah, it's a slight to like the image and like the PR of Lannister. Like, if anything, on an individual level, she'll be like, oh, like, you know, this, you know, they kill Tyrion. Give me excuse I want, but get rid of someone that I don't like. But yeah.
Yeah, she says, you know, she says, by what right do you dare lay hands on my blood? Who do you think you are? And he says, the hand of the king, charged by your own lord husband to keep the king's peace and enforce the king's justice. And she says, you were the hand of the king. And then Robert says, silence. You asked him a question and he answered it. But then he goes and has a go at Ned saying, keep the king's peace, you say. Is this how you keep my peace? Ned, 7 men are dead. 8 the queen corrected. So they actually took down quite a few before Jory and Will and another guy died.
Because a northerner is as strong as 10 sissy southernmen.
Apparently so. But, you can see how Ned is so in the Lannister's pocket, because he says, I said I will not have it. To hell with her reasons, which Catelyn's reason for taking Tyrion. You will command her to release the dwarf at once, and you will make your peace with Jaime. Knowing that, he doesn't care about Ned's truth here.
Mm-hmm. You know? And specifically when he says, this is how you keep the king's peace. And it's like, this isn't the king's peace. Like, king's peace, Robert, or the king's comfort?
Yeah, that is exactly it. It's the king's comfort. He just wished that, all of this is done with, and, you know.
Yeah, and I think you said Ned with the letter. So it's like, no, Robert, it's like, to hell with you, release the dwarf, blah, blah, blah.
I will not have it,
Ned. Catelyn had good reason for taking the imp. I said I will not have it.
Mm-hmm.
Three of my men were butchered because Jaime Lannister wished to chasten me. Am I to forget that? And my brother's not cause of the quarrel.
Yeah, and that she's lying again, saying that Ned was returning drunk from a brothel, and then his men attacked Jaime and his guards. Yeah. Seriously?
Yeah, and it's like, coming from a whorehouse, I was seeing your daughter, you asshole.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And he, it's just a bit awkward because he's talking about, Robert's daughter with the, with what's her name? I don't know. But right in front of Cersei, so it's a bit.
Yeah, it's, again, another reason why Robert has no sense or subtlety. Her grace will have no liking anything I have to say. I am told the Kingslayer has fled the city. Give me leave to bring him back to justice. No, mm-hmm. I want no more of this. Jaime slew 3 of your men and you 5 of his. Now it ends.
And then Ned says, is that your notion of justice? If so, I'm pleased that I'm no longer your hand. And I just think that Robert is a really shitty friend and king, right?
Yeah,
and this
yeah.
is the way that he's repaying Ned for everything that he has done. Ned helped him win the war and the throne, even though he doesn't want the throne, but yeah. And then left his whole family to service his hand, and he's just like, I don't care what you have to say, I don't care. Just, it's basically like he's wishing it to reverse back everything that was done, and it's not, and he doesn't want to listen. He listened to Jaime before he left, so why mm-hmm. can't he listen to Ned?
Yeah, he's not a good arbiter, because again, he's Lannister's got him by the balls anyway. Yeah. So what is it? Queen is like, if any man had dared to speak to a Targaryen as he has spoken to you, do you take me for Aerys?
Mm.
Do you think I, slight glimmer of yay Robert, where it's like, trying to hear, not obviously not as much as we should because we're all very Stark biased,
uh-huh, yeah.
But even giving that just a little, mm-hmm. Cersei's like, I took you for a king. Jaime and Tyrion are your own brothers by all the laws of marriage and the bonds we share. The Starks have driven off one and seized the other. What a jape the gods have made of us two. By all rights, you ought to be in skirts and me in the mail.
Yeah, and he goes and slaps the crap out of her.
Which Robert is so easily triggered if after, 50, near 20 years of marriage with this woman, and that can set him off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. He's a very fragile ego, I think he has.
Yeah, and then fine. She's like, I'll wear this as a badge of honor, which, mm-hmm. Again, not that I like Cersei, but again, Robert's just, ugh.
It's just gross. He's just gross. He just really pissed me off in this chapter. And he calls Merry Trent to take her out.
Yeah, so she goes.
I mean, not take her out as in kill her, but take her.
Take her away. Take her to time out or whatever.
Yeah, to the bedroom.
Whatever time out you put queens in, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, I should not have hit her. That was not kingly of me. And it's that interesting thing, in terms of combat and stuff, how do I fight someone if I can't hit them?
Yeah. He doesn't, that doesn't compute with him. Yeah. And he should know by now the way that she is anyway. They both just have no idea who each other who they are, but and then he's going off about that Rhaegar has won because, you know, Lyanna has died with him and he is with Cersei, and that's not, you know, that's not winning at all. And it's just like, shut the fuck up about Lyanna, Robert. It's just like really annoyingly because he's just so, he romanticizes this woman. And it wouldn't work out anyway. It wouldn't have worked out, to be honest.
Yeah. You know, I drove the spike right through that black armor into his black heart, and he died at my feet. They made up songs about it, yet somehow he still won. He has Lyanna now, and I have her.
Yeah.
Which.
Which, and then, you know, Ned's trying to talk to him, but he's like, I don't want to hear about this. We're going to, you know, I'm going to go to hunt tomorrow, and whatever you have to say, you can wait until I return, which we all know that's not going to happen.
Yep, and it's like, you, and he makes Ned take the hand of the king thing back, and it's like, you already know that this guy is not doing what you want. Like, you know, you wanted him to do all the administrative stuff while you can drink and whore around, but he's not doing it in the point that is non-disruptive, so why do you want him back?
Yeah, exactly. He's saying, you know, the Targaryen girl, and he's like, it's done, I don't want to hear any more about it. And it's just like, they keep butting heads, then why do you want him? It's exactly what you said. Why do you still want him there? What is his problem?
Yeah, why does he want him there? And, you know, I personally take the, again, J, or R plus L equals J, that the fact that even in this sort of, like, you know, dazed state, the fact that Ned is still worrying about, like, the Targaryen Daenerys makes me think, again, that there is that connection of, like, again, his sense of, If he'll go after Daenerys, he would totally go after Jon. And the fact that Ned is thinking about this, even after all that has happened and in this drunken, you know, half sedated state, is, you know, to me, more further evidence of, you know, Jon is a Targaryen.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, Ned says, why would you want me as your hand if you refuse to listen to my counsel? And he says, just wear the badge and run the kingdom, otherwise I'll pin it on Jaime. And that's it.
Yes, I will. Which I love, again, love first season, how much of the dialogue they took from the books, you know, made it into the show. And the way he points it is like, take it or I'll pin the damn thing on Jaime Lannister. And thus ends the shittiest bromance ever. And we move to Catelyn.
Fun.
Yes, which I genuinely forgot that the sort of trial by combat is told through Catelyn's perspective. I don't know, maybe I was thinking it was done through Tyrion's, but I forgot that this is all done through Catelyn.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, maybe it's George R. R. Martin's way of being like, she's not that dumb because she understands, you know, battle, I guess, and like people's way of fighting. I think she sort of understands. So it was an interesting way to look at the events that unfolded, I guess. But
yeah, and also to try and, you know, show her as being, you know, flawed but more benevolent than Lysa, which honestly is not that hard to do.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah, so we get a little bit of like lore, like legends about the Vale. Like, Alyssa Arryn had seen her husband, her brothers, and all her children slain, and yet in life she had never shed a tear. So in death the gods had decreed that she would know no rest until her weeping watered the black earth of the Vale, where the men she had loved were buried. Alyssa had been dead 6,000 years now, and still no drop of the torrent had ever reached the valley floor far below. Blowing your nose?
Yeah. Yeah, but could feel it just like coming. Yeah. It's a really interesting, I guess, foreboding bit of lore, because, that's what's going to happen with her. It's just really interesting, I find.
I do have a whole, like, you know, book about, like, I need to read more about the history of, like, when the Seven Kingdoms were Seven Kingdoms and, like, the different, you know, families before the Targaryens like conquered them all.
Yeah, that would be really cool. Yeah. But you know, I just think like after this lore about Alyssa Arryn, I was just thinking, look at the mess that this woman has done. Just, you know, Jory, the Roderick Cassel, you know, goes and says the Kingslayer's massing a host at Castle Rock. Your brother writes that he has sent riders to the Rock. The man in the Lord Tywin proclaimed his interest, but he has no answer. Edmure has commanded Lord Vance and Lord Piper to guard the pass below the Golden Tooth. He vows to you that he will yield no foot off Tully land without first watering with Lannister's blood.
Yeah, and Catelyn interprets this as, like, my father would not have given the defense of River Run to Edmure unless he was, like, truly incapacitated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So he's, he just looks like he's very sick. And I guess by now she also knows that Ned is also not well. I don't know.
Yep, and then we've got, Lannister is my prisoner. Again, not that I agree with, you know, Lysa's is doing, but again, Catelyn, you brought Tyrion to Lysa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. What does she hope for?
Yeah, honestly? Like, again, and blind spot, like, thinking Lysa's the same, thinking Baelish is the same, and just, like, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's,
which, even to begin with, was not very great.
No. It was completely just, you know, one person has told her this, and instead of her just, you know, maybe questioning him, I don't know, she just took him. It's just insane. It's just an insane situation. But she decides that she wants to leave.
Yeah,
I'm gonna go.
Yeah, the minute this is done, I'm going to Winterfell. And so she tries to go to Lysa's apartment and meets the Blackfish, you know, storming out. And
yeah.
You know, basically, Blackfish is over this shit, cannot blame him, and is wanting to go back to River Run to help protect River Run. And it's like, no, you can't, like, you know, come with us, uncle. You know, I will give you 1,000 men. River Run will not fight alone. And he's like, as you say, it's the long way home, but I'm more like to get there. I'll wait for you below. So he decides to, you know, to stay with her instead. And
yeah.
Yep, and we get Lysa. Again, they just
made out like a little festival, I guess, you know. I think Brendan calls it the Fool's Festival. As she walks in, everyone's there drinking and smoozing around, waiting for the fight around, to happen.
Having if this was mine, they'd be eating cute little butterbeer cupcakes.
Yeah, yeah.
Which absolutely. Which I, you know, I wrapped them up in cute boxes and gave them to my coworkers, and everyone was very happy.
Who wouldn't be? Yeah, honestly,
Santa's little cupcake fairy.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. But so she wants to talk to Lysa, but Lysa's just like, yeah, after this.
Yeah, and again, Lysa, she has this huge like moonstone sapphire necklace, like flirting with all the various suitors. It's just, you know, regardless of like the very flawed ethics of presuming that some higher being is going to intervene in a sort of fight, you know, even setting that whole aside, which is another thing, the fact that humans take such pleasure in watching violence.
It's crazy, isn't it? It's absolutely insane how
it's so disturbing.
It is.
And you would think that, you know, with the lack of, you know, science and medicine and people more prone to dying and having shorter life expectancy, that they would have a greater appreciation for life because it could so easily be taken away. But here it's treated so flippantly.
Yeah, it must be some sort of, I don't know, there must be some sort of scientific reason why humans are so obsessed with dying and gore and stuff like that, because people would go and see lynchings, wouldn't they? And
it was like a whole spectacle, like
public executions,
hangings and beheadings, like, yeah. I don't know, maybe it just fulfills that primal, oh, it's them and not me.
Yeah, or it fills the curiosity of about death, because death is the only thing that is certain in life.
And taxes.
Yeah, and taxes. Although we're not aware of that when we are kids. But you know, that's the only certain thing that will happen. You know, you are born and then one day you will die. That's the cycle of life. So I guess watching things like that spikes people's curiosities, maybe.
Well, I guess to be fair, there's, you know, again, people's interest and my morbid interest with, like, gothic fiction and murder mysteries. It is a mm-hmm. means of making flippant, you know, the notion of death. But that's done, again, in a purely, you know, with movies and literature, that's a purely imaginative exploration mm-hmm. of death and the spectacle of death. Not, let's all get out and watch these guys, you know, fight to the death.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's the thing. I wouldn't want to see that in real life. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's just really weird.
Yeah. Anyway. So, yeah, we've got this basically Fool's Festivals as it is called mm-hmm. and Catelyn's
Yeah, Catelyn is trying to convince Lysa to stop
you cannot
this.
You cannot be serious. And she's like, "Oh, yes, I am."
Yeah, and then, you know, the you know, she's telling Lysa, like, you know, Tyrion has value alive. If dead, he's only food for crows. And if his champion should prevail here, and then one of the guys who's trying to, who's flirting with Lysa, he says, "Small chance of that, my lady. Ser Vardis is a doughty fighter, and he'll make short work of the sellsword." And then she says, "Will he, my lord? I wonder." And then it says here, she had seen Bronn fight on the high road. It was no accident that he had survived the journey while other men had died. He moved like a panther, and that ugly sword of his seemed part of his arm. And I was wondering, do you think they would have listened to her if she told them this?
Honestly, I don't think so. Because as much as we harp on Catelyn has her own sort of snobbery, especially in regards to bastards and people's place in the social hierarchy and order of things. But at least in this case, she is able to see past the sort of snobbery of, yeah, he's not a knight. But that doesn't mean he doesn't know how to fight. Or if anything, he might know different styles of fighting that mm-hmm. may be better to his advantage.
Yeah.
But yeah. they're so wrapped up in their own, again, valor and, you know, mm-hmm. awesomeness as knights that I don't think anyone, especially Catelyn being a woman, they're not going to listen to her saying, like, "I saw him fight, like, this is not a good idea."
Yeah, yeah, true. Very true.
Wait, they even flat out say women don't know anything of these matters. Who says
that?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, he says, yeah, it's Ser Morton Wainwood, another person they're trying to get Lysa's attention. Yeah, he says, "Women understand little of these things. Ser Vardis is a knight, sweet lady. The other fellow, well, he sorts are all cowards at heart. Useful enough in battle with thousands of their fellows around them, but send them up alone and their manhood leaks right out of them." Silly woman. You know nothing about war.
Like the ultimate mansplaining?
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Interesting.
I don't know. But yeah, it's... Again, this whole thing, Catelyn cannot believe that this is still going on. And I wondered, is this going to be relevant to the plot? Because right before the fight starts, we get this whole confusion of, you know, because one is saying, yeah, you're right. He needs, you know, Aaron needs to get away from his mother and, like, become a man. And to that end, he was supposed to go to Dragonstone for fostering. And Catelyn's like, no, he was supposed to go to Casterly Rock. And the Maester's just like, no, begging your forgiveness, my lady. But it was Lord Jon who... So I'm wondering if that has some significance that there was this discrepancy.
Yeah, yeah. I was trying to remember where she heard that from. You know, that Robert Arryn was supposed to be fostered at Casterly Rock. It was from Robert, wasn't it?
Yeah, Robert.
Robert told Ned when they were in... Yes, okay. Yeah, when they were in Winterfell.
Yeah.
They said, and Ned said, oh, he can come and
come to us, Bran. Yeah. Bran will like a friend. And he's like, no, he's already going to Casterly Rock.
Yeah, so it was done all in secret, hidden away from the king.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it is very dodgy.
Yeah, very dodgy, and yeah, we'll see if that ever comes to light. And then the bell tolled loudly, and the fight begins. Which is why, again, this whole spectacle, I hope at one point to do a scholarly Slitherclaws comparing the Triwizard Tournament to the Hunger Games, and again, the like marine fighting pits or trial by combat or whatever.
Yeah, that would be really cool. But, you know, it's describing here, yeah, they come in, both of them, the Bronn and Ser Vardis Egan.
Which they gave him, which they gave him like this sort of special sword and honored, but it's, and Catelyn's like, that's not the sword he's used to. Like, give him his own sword.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's just like wearing steel from head to toe, encased in heavy plate armor over mail and padded surcoat to large circular rondos, enameled cream and blue in the moon of Falcons. In a Falcon sigil of House Arryn, protecting a vulnerable junction of the arm and breast. But so he's like really heavy. And compared to that, like Bronn only has a half helm that protected like his nose and head, and like a male sort of shirt thing.
Yeah.
And she knows that as well. She knows that that's a bit weird, just because I think it says, where is it, like a little bit ahead, that it says here, when Littlefinger wanted to fight Brandon for Catelyn's hand, when Brandon saw that that Littlefinger didn't have a lot of armor on, he also stripped down.
He stripped down so that they were both at the same level of like defense and protection.
Yeah. So, and to make him faster as well, because he knew that it would make Littlefinger faster.
Yeah.
So
both honorable and strategic.
Yeah.
I wish we knew more about Brandon Stark.
Yeah, me too. Me too, actually.
Because, you know, again, the whole, you know, I'm not really interested in going through play by play of the Bronn and, you know, guy fighting.
Oh, yeah, no, that's too long.
Yeah, that's too long. And I'm just interested, again, because she gets this flashback that we... Again, this is the way flashbacks... This is the way you establish, like, plot and relationship with characters. You don't need it all to be dreams.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, when there's, like, something that is really long, a long sequence of just fighting and fighting and fighting, then you can add, you know, stuff in.
Yeah, like, this is much more well done. And so Catelyn, goes to this whole thing of Peter asking to like battle Brandon, and Baelish asked for her a favor for her, and you know she wouldn't give it, and it's like like, to me, Baelish is the typical quote-unquote nice guy who will judge women very harshly, like Catelyn, for not being interested in them and being like stuck up and snobby and not only wanting like alpha quote-unquote males and not like betas or whatever. But they themselves, would they be willing to date or marry anything less than a 10?
No. Not at all.
Yeah, so it's like...
But women don't have a say. That's the thing. In their eyes, women don't have a say. How dare they reject them? You know?
Yeah, of course.
So, this whole bit, right, where, you know, Brandon fights Littlefinger, and then, he asks for a favor, but she gives it to Brandon instead because she was betrothed to him. And then after this, when he's in bed, you know, getting better,
recovering,
her father just tells her that she can't go see him, even though she did want to see him, but he said that she couldn't. And then after he recovers, he gets sent away. And then I'm thinking, it's actually astounding that she doesn't see that might make a guy angry with her.
Yeah, it's and also I was just thinking the fact that she just phrases it very specifically, like, you know, I was betrothed to Brandon, so I gave him my favor. Like, so it's like, did she do that as a sort of like, you know, to save face and like go with the motions, and that's the appropriate thing to do? Like, did she ever, like, of course it was arranged, but did she ever like Brandon at all?
No, she was just, you know, I guess she was just, he's the lord of his household. Well, he's going to be the lord of his household. He's strong and good ties, good family ties. And women, I guess women didn't have a say in things like that. No, it doesn't matter if they like them or not.
Yeah, well, of course, she didn't have a say, but I'm just wondering how, like, far it went in terms of her just, like, borderline tolerating. Because, I don't know, because I feel like her, like, giving him a favor and, you know, making the request, you know, please don't kill him. That even though if they don't, like each other or love each other, like, there is a certain level of, like, understanding and respect.
Yeah, yeah.
And the fact that Brandon was willing to indulge her in this way.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it speaks more about him than about her. Really, just shows that this little guy is just, you know, it's like a little brother to her, and she doesn't want him harmed. So,
Yep. And the fight was over almost as soon as it began. You know, Baelish versus Brandon, and Peter's rings, all he muttered cat as the bright blood came flowing between his mailed fingers. She thought she had forgotten that. And yeah, and so that's the last image she ever had of Peter Baelish. And then everything should be all hunky-dory when he, you know, basically summons her to him in King's Landing. Yeah. And that is...
She's very gullible.
Yeah, very gullible. It would make more sense for her to be this gullible if she had gone to see Baelish while he was recovering and have some sort of, like, closure or something like that. And even if Baelish, like just lied to her saying, okay, it's okay, and they quote-unquote parted as friends, that would make more sense for her to be gullible. But that's just not how it happened.
Yeah, exactly. Like, in her head, she's like, okay, my dad, you know, stopped me from seeing him. But in Peter's head, it's not, you know, in Peter's head, he might not even be told that, you know, that her father said, no, you can't go see him. In his head, like, Catelyn didn't go see him.
Yeah.
He nearly died.
Yeah. And her, how dare she give Brandon a favor? And, like, he wouldn't even see Edmure because Edmure was Brandon's squire and that couldn't be forgiven.
Yeah, exactly. You see? And she just does all of that, just passes her by. Ugh, honestly.
Yeah. At least Lily was able to figure it out by 15 years old.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. She cut out that toxic, weird, incel friendship there.
Yeah, at 15. And Catelyn is 35.
Yeah. No, she's not. Ned's 35.
Okay.
She's like 27 or something.
Or she's no more than 30. She's our age.
Yeah. She's around that. She's around that. You know, and yeah, she's still just like, my friend who will never lie to me, who never wants revenge from me.
Yeah, so that's basically sort of the end of the flashback. And again, all play by play, but ultimately, of course, Bronn wins.
Yeah, the other guy gets really tired because, you know, Bronn is just being, he's just like dancing out of the way, basically, and all the other lords of the Vale are just like, oh, fight, you coward, blah, blah, blah. Then they get a bit like tired and start mingling around and drinking wine while Bronn is there like tiring the guy out, and then eventually he gets too tired and then Bronn starts stabbing him in different places, which is good.
Yeah, and it's honestly reminded me of Avatar The Last Airbender, the way Aang would fight, because, you know, all of their tactics are like, you know, evasive because, you know, it's mostly, you know, defensive.
Yeah, yeah. And then and then at some point all the other lords are seeing, okay, this is not good, you know, but Lysa is just, you know, she just gets exasperated and said, you know, enough Servardis, finish him now, my baby's growing tired. And then he's like, right, and then he goes to charge, and then Bronn, you know, dances out of the way, and as Servardis is, I guess, trying to recover from the blow that he tried to give Bronn, Bronn just goes and stabs him right in the chest or something.
Yeah, Bronn put his shoulder into the statue's back. The weather likeness of Alyssa Aran tottered and fell with a great crash, and Sir Varys Egdon went down beneath her. So you see, he basically got smashed to death.
He got smashed and then Bronn stabbed him.
Yeah. Is it over, Mother? The Lord of the Eyrie said. Yes, Lysa said glummy, her voice is cold and dead as the captain of her guard.
Yeah. And then Catelyn says, no, it's only now beginning.
Yeah, can I make the little man fly now? And Tyrion's like, not this little man.
I'm going. Goodbye.
Bye, Felicia.
Yeah. And then, and then she's like, yeah, you can go and make your way on the
high road by yourself. The
high road by yourselves. Good luck.
Yeah. Yep. Which, again, Tyrion didn't need to have this side quest.
No, it's just completely pointless. Well, but it's, you know, pushes the whole situation forward, I guess.
Like, I'm trying to think of how, like, things would have happened with Ned and discovering the bastards and stuff. Like, would there be any substantial change if Catelyn had not taken Tyrion?
Yeah. It would have given Ned more time to figure things out and then speak to Robert, and maybe Robert would have listened. And maybe that would have been, like, in an alternate universe, would be another fight that would happen, because it would be between, I guess, the Crown and the Lannisters, mm-hmm, or something.
Yeah, that's possible. But yeah, anyway, speculation. And now we move on to Jon. Which, my first note for this chapter of, I need Alistair Thorne to, like, speak at the next graduation.
I know. He's just so cutting. He's a dickhead, but he's so cutting. It's so funny.
You are as hopeless as any boys I've ever trained. And basically, he says, like, you are, you know, technically I have to call you men's on the Night's Watch because I need to make room for the other poor sods that are coming in. So here's who is graduating. Lover, Pimple, Monkey, Sir Loon, and the Bastard.
Toad, Stonehead. Fucking, I was like, who are these people? All of them, basically Pip and Gran and John and God knows whoever else, they all graduate apart from Sam. And Sam's there in the corner just like, oh yeah, I'm really happy for you. But, you know, he's not very pleased because it's the fact that John and the rest won't be able to protect him anymore. Because he'll be doing other things.
Yeah, because, you know, John is only one person. He can't go around, like, threatening everyone with ghosts.
Yeah, exactly. He has other shit to do, you know.
He has other shit to do. So they have a whole, like, graduation dinner where it's, like, fresh from the Lord Commander's table, where they get, like, chickpea hummus and, like, bread and, like, really nice shit.
I know, yeah. And, yeah, they're saying, you know, well, they say they'll keep us together. And, you know, some want to be rangers and another one wants to be
a mason.
Yeah, builders. It says,
And everyone's trying to, like, you know, flatter John by saying, oh, you'll be the next, like, first ranger. And it's like, my uncle is still alive.
Yeah, it's like, oh, like your uncle was. And it's like, not was. He still is. He's still alive.
Which I think Benjen Stark is still alive. He's too badass to die.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe. But, you know, then they notice that Sam's not around. Mm-hmm. Pip says it's not like him to miss a meal. Do you suppose he's taken ill? And then John says he's frightened we're leaving him. And then he says, once we say our words, we have our duties to attend to. Some of us will be sent away to East Watch or the Shadow Tower. Some will remain in training with the likes of Rast and Cougar. Mm-hmm. And these new boys who are coming up the King's Road, God only knows what they will be like, but you can bet Sir Alistair will send them against him first chance he gets.
Pip made a grimace. You did all you could. All we could wasn't enough, John said.
Yeah. So, you know, he just leaves and goes to get Ghost. And he gets on a horse and he's kind of like deliberating, I guess, having doubts about his decision a little bit about the Night's Watch, because he says, you know, I'm not a brother of the Night's Watch yet. I haven't sworn my vows. I could easily just leave and go back home to Winterfell. And he says, but, you know, Lady Stark will be there and she will not welcome you. So he doesn't know everything that's going on. He doesn't know that she's not there.
Yeah, and what does it say? You know, he's deliberating, and again, he's, you know, kind of reconciling the fact that this isn't this glorified, you know, order, you know, with a super big purpose. It's where the draggles of society are thrown to give them something to do. And, you know, even with all of that, and of course there are good people like Sam and others, but just seeing that the system is broken, and yet still that is more appealing than going back to Winterfell with Lady Stark.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you believe
what how does nasty? That say?
Yeah. It means she was incredibly nasty to him. You know, and without his dad there, because I guess his dad, well, Ned protected him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He would be completely massacred. And obviously she would send him away. He would have nowhere to go if he went back. So,
yeah,
you know. But so he just kind of like made his decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, he wheeled his horse around and started for home. So now he, I guess like him thinking that the Night's Watch is home.
Mm-hmm.
Made his decision.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that very poignant point there where he has his epiphany that, yes, I am going to take this, like, seriously.
Yeah.
And, yeah. But still, you know, just because he decides he's not going to accept the shitty system as it is. And so John, upon his return, decides he wants to visit Maester Aemon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And he finds, well, it's quite late at night, I guess. And yeah.
It's super late. The other stewards, Chet, is really grumpy and doesn't want to see it. And it's like, yeah. I can stand her all night if I must. And so they finally let John in. And John starts to explain that Sam has not graduated with the rest of them. And Maester mm-hmm. Aemon's like, you know, it's up to Sir Alistair to decide when the cadets are ready and when they're not.
Mm-hmm.
And John is, he's hopeless with the sword. My sister Arya could tear him apart, and she's not yet 10. If Sir Alistair makes him fight, it's only a matter of time before he's hurt or killed. And mm-hmm. it's like trying both to appeal, again, this is a good thing about John, both appealing to the moral aspect, but also appealing to the like logistical, like what is the point of Alistair running him into the ground when he could be put to something else when we're already so short-staffed as it is.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact they're all made to fight. Yeah, okay, everyone should somehow be able to fight. But what I think is that in that sort of training, they should distinguish which people would carry on in training for fighting and which other people would be better trained somewhere else. You know, like being a builder or a steward.
Yeah, and so that's stupid. You know, I remember once I asked Mr. Lewin why he wore a chain around his throat. And yeah, and this is very sweet and very cute. Mm-hmm. And it pulls at Master Aemon's heartstrings where John is saying, like, the different metals are all different. Like, it's gold for, like, accounting. It's, like, silver for healing, iron for warcraft. You cannot beat tin like copper, but that doesn't mean tin isn't useful. And all the chains, you know, society needs all sorts of different types of people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I put it here, like, the amount of thought that John put into Sam and making sure he's safe is actually really heartwarming and lovely to see, like, how thoughtful he is, mm-hmm. you know, about his friend and how he doesn't want harm to come to him. It's actually really lovely.
Yes, and I love how and so it's like, what can we do for Sam? It's like, you know, he can read books. He can be a steward. He knows sums. Like, mm-hmm. he can even handle the ravens. He's really good with animals. Ghost took to him straight off. Why kill one to no end? Make use of him instead. And Mr. Aemon is just like, Maester Lewin taught you well, Jon Snow. Your mind is as deaf as your blade, it would seem. Does that mean? It means I shall think on what you have said, the maester told him, and now I believe I'm ready to sleep.
Yeah, which is yeah, I think the chat, you know, the talk about the different links, the different maester links, really really helped him in that case, I think.
Yeah, it's it just goes to show that it got me thinking about wider society, that yeah, society needs all sorts of different types of, you know, people to function.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but there's only certain fields which are respected and are paid. But in actuality, they need the less glamorous ones if they're not being done, it's all going to crumble, which is why there's this whole pandemic showcasing the essential workers are oftentimes those who are paid the less and are the least respected. And they're like, screw it, I'm not going to go through this for a Karen to spit in my face for not wearing a mask.
Yeah, absolutely. It's time for everyone to be treated with respect, regardless of what they do, because everyone contributes to the same society.
Yeah, we all.
Well, some more, even.
Yeah. Yeah, contributing to society and not punishing them with, you know, growing house cost and wages being stagnant and all sorts of shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty, and thus concludes the very heartwarming chapter of why Jon Snow is Ned Stark 2.0.
Yeah. Well, way better than Ned Stark, isn't it?
Yeah, way better, because Jon can see past these sort of stereotypical archetypes. Ned's as good as he is, cannot.
Yeah.
Only a little bit in regards to Arya, but not much beyond that.
Yeah, yeah.
Alrighty then, and now we can move on to our history lessons. You said yesterday you were saying how you're very, you know, yours is quite interesting.
Yeah, because mine is not exactly a history lesson. It's more of a science lesson.
Ooh, do go on.
Yeah. So I was thinking of the fact that, you know, how Robert Arryn is just very sickly child. And, you know, it took ages for them to conceive. There were lots of, you know, in the last Catelyn chapter, we learned that Lysa had issues with past pregnancies, from stillbirths to miscarriages, right? And the blame is usually put on the woman, you know,
right,
because either from their own reproductive systems or just because of their age. Although Lysa is not old enough to have an age issue,
yeah,
but it's probably put on her. I don't think it was specifically said that, you know, it was her issue.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that Jon Arryn is quite old.
Right.
He had Ned and Robert in his household as wards.
Mm-hmm.
So we know that he was way older than usual.
Yeah.
And he married Lysa. So it has come, I don't know if this is recent, but I have heard a lot recently about this. And I got this information from healthline.com just to back up some of the things that I heard. But I have heard this around for quite often nowadays. A research has come out to identify that sperm quality declines significantly after 50 years old for people who produce sperm. And it becomes more difficult for them to father children as they age. Research led by Dr. Guy Morris from the Centre for Reproductive and Genetic Health in London found that nearly 5,000 biological men that were tested, only 42% of them over the age of 51 met the World Health Organization standard for semen quality. And then even when an older person manages to get successfully a woman pregnant, such pregnancies can carry higher risks. Infants born to older fathers were found to be at risk of premature births, stillbirths, low birth weight, seizures, and birth defects such as congenital heart disease and cleft palate. So this can explain why Robert Arryn is a very sickly child.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know if, I don't know if you watched this series on Netflix. It's called the Bling Empire, and it's about these like Chinese, Japanese, like Asian families that were really well off.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, they had trouble conceiving, and you know, the woman got really, really sick because they thought the problem was with her. And then at the end of the day, they tested her husband's sperm, and it was actually his issue.
Mm-hmm.
And she went through absolute hell, you know, mm-hmm. for it. So, mm-hmm. you know, the actions of a man that has left way too long mm-hmm. to conceive a child can horribly affect a woman.
Oh, this is true. That you talking about that reminded me of, I remember high school, was it my chemistry or biochemistry class, where probably biochemistry, where we were talking about a little bit, you know, the history of science. And, you know, well into the 19th century, there was this sort of perception that, like, the sperm basically had a little human. Like, basically, you know, it was a way to, you know, it was a way for the patriarchy to, like, justify to themselves that, you know, even though the woman carries the child, like, you know, the man is the main person. The contribution of the man accounts for the majority of what it takes to, you know, to create life. And so, yeah, trying to make the sperm as more than what it is. Of all the things that, you know, they can't have control over, they still wanted to cling to control in this one area where biologically they just cannot.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, it goes to show that, you know, John Aaron marrying late, trying to have a child with this much younger woman, severely damaged her, because now she's completely crazy, and he had a child who, you know, was very sickly.
That's good. Maybe we should add science lessons to these as an activity as well.
I know. Maybe that will come back. But yeah, I just thought that was really interesting.
Mine was significantly less innovative, where I chose to hone in on just, you know, John's deliberation in realizing that technically I haven't said my vows, like I could go back to Winterfell. You know, that just made me think of, you know, monastic orders and, you know, the sort of vows that they take for, you know, to become monks. Although, again, there's no really modern version in the sense of, you know, again, this sort of like celibate, you know, but they're still fighters, like the way the Night's Watch is. So, you know, of course, the closest equivalent is the historical Knights Templar during the Crusades. And so I was just fishing around history.com, and they're saying how, like, you know, they actually found a, not the original, the so basically they found a book that was the rules of the Templars, which outlined a detailed code of conduct governing every aspect of daily life. The first draft, composed in 1129, dictated 68 rules designed to keep a Templar knight on a tight leash, reflecting their vows of poverty, chastity, and especially obedience. So none of the originals survive from, you know, Latin and French, but they have survived through subsequent later translations. And so, yeah, just all these sort of rules of the Knights Templar of two to a bull. Because of the shortage of bulls, the brothers will eat in pairs so that one may study and the other more closely, so that neither austerity nor secret abstinence is introduced into the communal meal, as it seems to join just to us that each brother should have the same ration of wine in his cup. Meals in moderation should be sufficient to eat three meals. Eat meat three times a week, except at Christmas, All Saints and Assumption. No leaving the table unless it's a real emergency.
Wow.
Okay. If brothers are eating at the table and any of them suffers a nosebleed, or the war cry is raised, or there is a fire, or the horses are unsettled, to avoid harm to the house, they may get up from the table without permission for all these things and then return to eating at the table if they wish.
Wow. Thank you for being so kind.
Yeah, when in the proverbial doghouse, eat on the floor. While a brother is on penance, when he eats, he should sit on the ground before the household.
Right.
Yeah, should not be, what is it? Watch out for the ladies. Company of women is a dangerous thing, for it is, for by it the old devil has led many from the straight path to paradise. Henceforth, let not ladies be admitted into the house of the temple. Don't even talk about the fair sex. We prohibit and firmly forbid any brother to recount to another brother, nor to anyone else, the pleasure of the flesh that he has had with immoral women. And if it happens that he hears them told by another brother, he should immediately silence them. If he cannot do this, he should straightaway leave that place and not give his heart's ear to the peddler of filth.
Wow. They couldn't even listen to it. They couldn't listen, even hear. Wow.
Yeah, so anyway, so there's a good 68 rules here. I'm not going to go into absolutely all of them. But, you know, we get the sense of the level of obedience and the level of control and, you know, stuff that, you know, probably is paralleled in the Night's Watch. And just thinking that this is a better alternative than to going to Winterfell with Catelyn Tully.
Imagine. She must have made his life hell. Because at the end of the day, I don't think she ever laid a hand on him, but psychological abuse sometimes it's even worse because not visible and it affects like your very being, I guess.
Yeah. It doesn't heal as quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's my history lesson of all that is more attractive than Catelyn Tully as your stepmother.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I completely understand.
Yeah. Alrighty then, and let us get into friendship lessons. So, what was your lesson?
So, mine comes from Robert, and take that as you will. It can mean both positive or negative. Mm-hmm. But remember, this is what my friendship lesson is. Remember what your friend has done for you, and repay in earnest, either good or bad. I think I don't think Robert has been very kind repaying the favors to Ned. He just takes his very
Yeah, he left him alone for 9 years, and then he's just trying to cash it all in now, and it's like, screw you. I think the term in anthropology is called social reciprocity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the idea is, if you're a decent person, you naturally, you don't want to always think of tit for tat, but you naturally want to, always level the playing field. Just like, my coworker once got me coffee, so she was too busy to go on a coffee run with me, so I brought her back a vanilla latte and I paid for it. Just little things back and forth. And that's a big, you don't want to see, I don't want to say that, relationships are transactional, like, in a gross sense, but you just, when you're a good person, you naturally want to, pull your weight in a friendship and do your bit.
Yeah, exactly. Robert's not doing that at all. He just takes from Ned,
Yes, of course he does, because he's a shitty human being who still idolizes a woman 15 years dead.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't even know her.
Didn't even know her, and couldn't even see that she actually liked Rhaegar.
Yeah, yeah.
Supposedly. We'll see.
Supposedly. Yeah. We still have too much of that, the show mentality. Yeah. I hope that it's the same. I read somewhere that the ending was different than what George R. R. Martin wanted, but we'll see.
Alrighty then, and then some... My friendship lesson, of course, I think I already reiterated in another previous friendship lesson this issue of, see people with their different strengths and encourage those strengths, like John mm-hmm. Emphasized that a lot. I think I already said something similar to that with Arya, like encourage mm-hmm. your friends to, play to their strengths, even mm-hmm. if it's not directly socially desirable. But, so I decided to veer away from that specifically, and also came from Robert in a don't do, is don't blackmail someone into doing something that they don't want to do, which probably has shown up in mm-hmm. maybe previous lessons, but specifically honing in on the fact that, he's giving the Hand of the King badge back to Ned and is basically threatening him, like, you do it, or... I will make Jaime Lannister the Hand of the King. So literally mm-hmm. forcing, Ned to take it because he doesn't want, I want the position or something, or I don't want Jaime to have it, just because he knows, like, for the kingdom, Jaime Lannister being the Hand would be a disaster. And so Ned being forced in the situation of for the betterment of everyone involved, like, sticking around even though he doesn't want to.
Yeah, it's very unfair, and it's shitty because he knows that Ned doesn't like Jaime anyway, and then this whole kerfuffle happened. Ned wouldn't let that happen. He wouldn't
Ned is already freaking out of Jaime being made like the regent of, as warden of the East for the heir, and that whole thing, like, that was all way back on the King's Road when Robert told him this, and so already wasn't on that, and is Ned in good conscience gonna let Jaime Lannister be Hand of the King? No. So that's a really dirty, way to play Robert Baratheon, and you suck.
Yeah, Yeah. So don't manipulate your friends, I guess, into doing something that they don't want to do.
Yeah. Like, don't threaten them with a worse alternative to make them do something they don't want.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Because it's like, oh, if I can't control you to do this, then I'll let someone else. It's like, complicated, like, custody-ish relationships between parents and grandparents, where the parents, you know, the grandparents are, like, housing, you know, or taking care of both the parent, both their children and their grandchildren. And so, there's a contentious relationship between the child and the, you know, mm-hmm. and the grand, you know, the child and the grand, and the grandparent or the parent. And it's like, mm-hmm. okay, if you don't do what I want, I'll just leave and take your grandchildren away. And so the grandparents uh-huh. are in this shitty position. And so, yeah, I think it's just like that. So screw you, Robert.
Yeah, yeah. He's very shitty. Very, very shitty.
Alrighty then. And thus concludes this episode of Podcaster's Landing. Who are our next three?
Yeah, we have Tyrion, Ned, and Sansa.
Sansa, interesting. Alrighty then. So yeah. All right. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Podcaster's Landing. The music to our intro is copyrighted by Persian German composer Ramin Djawadi. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophia Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media. Sophia Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophia Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophiaMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophia Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophiaMareStudios. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.